Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your Cognitive Rampage. You have to believe in the power of you. Uncomfortable is where the change is. Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you are living your Cognitive Rampage. I was very excited to do this podcast today with Dr. Lane Phillips. He's a DO who was in urgent care practice for a long time, direct medical practice, switched over to some wellness care that he does. It's a very, very successful practice. But my point, I wanted to bring Dr. Phillips on to talk about the COVID-19 issues, do's, don'ts, treatments, what he's thinking, what he's heard, what he's researched. And he even talks about some home treatments you can do, not that if you get it, but for your immune system. We go all over the gamut talking about COVID-19. I enjoyed this podcast. It helped me out. I worry about some things too, just like a lot of you do. Some of you don't, but a lot of you that are worried about it. I talked a lot about things I was worried about, things I was questioning, things I think about, things I've worried about. I hope I was able to get to at least what everybody was thinking they wanted to ask or wanted to hear. I know we covered a lot. I asked a lot of questions. I tried to play devil's advocate on both sides of this. And listen to the expert, because he is an expert. He is a DO, so way beyond most of us out there, right, that thinks we know everything because we've seen enough news or read some articles. It was good to hear from a doctor to speak on this. It helped me out some to hear some of this. I hope it helps you out, too. I hope you enjoy this podcast. You can find, he gives his website at the end of this of where you can find him at. Definitely worth searching him out and the things that he does and provides for his patients. We covered at the end of the podcast, though, so he'll give you the website and those things. But I really enjoyed this podcast today with my friend, Dr. Lane Phillips.
I think today maybe we talk about all the things going wrong with what's going on with COVID rather than the boring stuff, because I got plenty.
Well, yeah, I mean, before we get started, let people know who you are, background, that kind of stuff.
All right, we'll do that. You just tell me when we're going.
Oh, we're on. We're going, brother.
All right. Nice to see you, Adam. Do you want to introduce me or
no, just I'll do an intro when I go back to this. I'll add an intro to it, but let everybody else your background, that kind of thing, so they know who you are before we jump into it.
All right. Thanks for having me on your show, Adam. My name is Dr. Lane Phillips. I am a urgent care physician. I've been practicing that for over 20 years. I've had about 100,000 people go through my clinic. About 60,000 of those have been respiratory tract infections, so a lot of experience in this space. About 5 years ago, I got into wellness medicine, and that'll come up in the conversations later today. But I got tired of seeing everybody's medicines increase every year, 3 medicines, 5 medicines, 7 medicines, 12 medicines. And at the end of the day, I didn't go to medical school to just treat everything. It was really to prevent things from occurring. And that is what, you know, medicine should be about. So I've been doing that for the last 5 years, still doing some urgent care. And you know, I'm happy to be on the show today. And hopefully I'll have some good information for you.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. And so let's just dive right in, man. I mean, I know all I got to do is set the fuse off for you just a little bit and it's going to go. So kind of walk us through the beginning of this, right, of where this started, how this came to be, and just do your thing, and I'll fill in as – I definitely have some questions lined up, but kind of the beginning of this pandemic, how it started, where it came from, what we should have done, what we didn't do. I know it's 1,000 questions in one.
Yeah, look, I mean, just to start at the basics, the coronavirus is the cause of 10 to 30% of all colds. Always has been, always will be, not going away. So we've seen coronavirus every year, and most people get colds 2 to 3 times a year. That's an average. And those were alpha coronaviruses. And then in 2003, we saw our first beta coronavirus, which was SARS-1. This is what escaped from the lab in China, as we now know. And what surprises the surprises maybe has escaped from there again. Trump won't say how he knows, but it's not really a secret. And so what happened is in the beginning of this year or end of last year, the cat got out of the bag, so to speak, or maybe the bat got out of the cave or whatever. I'm sure, maybe somebody wasn't careful in the lab like happened last time. And the coronavirus started in China and has spread across the world. And so viruses are things that your own immune system should cure versus bacteria like strep where you need antibiotics. And so a lot of what we'll talk about today is, is this overkill for treating a virus? How bad is it? Who's going to get it? And so on and so forth. But they declared that emergency, and, I think it was the beginning of February. And since then, the pandemic of America, economic destruction has occurred.
Now this was a new strain, right? It's a new strain of coronavirus, correct?
Right. So, they labeled it COVID ID. Maybe this is the covert way of IDing everybody, which we'll get into a later. I have plenty of conspiracy theories based upon a lot of truth. So, where the fine line is will be discussed. But this strain seems maybe or maybe not to be acting differently than the first one that came out. And that's actually one of the things we're going to talk about today.
All right. So this technically is a new strain then of this, right?
Right. It's a beta coronavirus, a new strain of it. And they are able to detect that in some way, shape, and form, which is mostly a farce when it comes to testing. But I don't even know where to jump in with all the things going on here. I'm going to try to take your lead here, but there's a lot that people should know about.
Well, because we were hearing that a lot, right? I was hearing a lot that we don't know what the virus will do. It's a new strain. We've never seen it. It's 6 months old, whatnot. It just came out, so we're not sure how to treat it. So let's just be safe, lock everything down. We don't know. What was it, Chicken Little going on, or?
Well, look, there are people who know exactly what's going to happen, and they're called drug companies and laboratories. And so they do know what's going to happen, and they're fully prepared for it. We just don't know what's going on. And some of the people that are leading the way either have malintentions, and so they're giving us mistruths on purpose, or they really don't know what they're talking about. We could start off with the first thing is statistics. Okay. Look, you need all the numbers to make a stat. You can't not have all the information and say, okay, yesterday, and you hear it on the news every day, on August 4th, we're going to hit 72,000 deaths. How do they know what day? What kind of math are they using when you haven't tested everybody for it? It's just insane. Look, let's do a fun experiment here, just not for nothing.
All right.
How much money do I have?
A dollar.
Okay. Now just a trick question here. How much money do I have?
I can only see a dollar.
Right. Well, what if I had $2 and you didn't know about that?
Right.
But guess what? What if I had another dollar behind that? You need to know about that. Every time I ask you what the number is, it's changing on you. And this is within, 10 seconds. And what if I even pulled something out? Oh, I didn't know quarters count. And that's basically what they're doing with the stat. It's they're trying to adjust every time without all of the information. You have a numerator and a denominator. But if you don't know the full numerator, you can't come up with the stat you're trying to use. And that is just outrageous.
So what makes someone like an organization like the CDC or something like that begin to put out these stats? What's pushing them to do this this kind of math?
You and I don't know who owns and runs the CDC and WHO. And if we did, we could call them out, we might disappear. And so it is the most nefarious thing. If you look at the council, I don't want to mess up his title, but he ran the infectious disease for Europe when the SARS-1 came out, and he said it was the biggest medical scandal of all time, and it was a vaccine play. In fact, let me correct that, because it was about swine flu that he said it. So these viruses come out, and they're always for the reason of something finding a cure. Wait till you see how much this new drug, Remdesivir, ends up costing for the ID in the hospital. I bet you it's 10 to 20 grand.
Holy shit. Yeah, because at first it was the hydrochloroquine. That's the ultimate end-all, be-all. What's the news on that?
Well, the thing is that might very well work, but it's never going to get FDA approval for the simple fact that it's a generic, and it costs $4.65. And who's going to do a study to try to get $4.65? you're going to do this. The one that gets approved is the one that's getting repurposed, that's only going to come in an IV, that you can only get in a hospital, that you can blah, 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 blah. This is a money thing. Let me tell you something, and I hate to, you know, jump to a different subject, but it's relevant to this one.
Yeah, yeah.
So are you familiar with Donald Rumsfeld?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about him for a second. Aspartame failed the FDA for 20 years. It causes headaches in everybody, cancer in rats. It should never have been approved. It failed every year until the CEO of Searle Pharmaceuticals went into government. And that year, he got aspartame to pass. Do you know who that CEO was?
Oh, shit.
Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, of course.
But wait. Do you know who the CEO was? And obviously, he still has a lot of stock. But do you know who the CEO was when the SARS broke out the first time?
Uh-oh.
Donald Rumsfeld. Oh. And guess what? Guess what? And that pharmaceutical company was a new one called Gilead, which is the one making remdesivir.
Holy shit, man.
And guess where the flu shots are made? Right next to the Wuhan. I mean, there's so much stuff going on that you just have to piecemeal together that it's just insane. It's just nefarious, to say the least. I think maybe it wasn't supposed to be this bad, but it got out of control. But at the end of the day, to me, this is corona. It's still a cold, and you may have risk factors for it, but it's not acting like traditional pneumonia. It's acting like an inflammation process. You know, we'll get into that later. But at the end of the day, you know, there are certain people that are at risk for getting this and not doing well, and those are the same people who are at risk for the flu and everything else of you know, related to colds going into pneumonias.
Yeah, some of the what scares me is I see some of these anomalies, these amazing athletes that get it and then are down for the count for like 2 weeks, possible dying. You know, they're on ventilators. Like those anomalies is what scares me the most.
It may be because they're mistreating it. You know, there's a lot of information. And the first thing I was going to start off with is this article, which I guess you could post at the bottom of the podcast. Why? I don't know if you can see this on your screen, but it's why SARS will not return.
Yeah.
And there were lessons in that. And in those lessons, so, you know, when you're making future decisions, you have to go back to the past when you've seen something before, because that's how you gain new knowledge and have some baseline. So this article came out. It's by Donald Lowe. He's like the infectious disease guy in Canada. And it's a summary of some studies that were done in China. And basically it said the worst thing you can do is quarantine everybody.
The worst.
The worst.
I mean, this is an ancient application, right? I mean, the quarantine idea, right? What was it for? I forget the history on the actual idea of it.
Well,
they quarantine them on ships, right?
The
they would show up on ships.
So they said not to quarantine because let's say somebody sick was in the house. Now you're going to give it to the other people in the house. And then the other people who got sick during SARS-1 were the people in the hospital who were taking care of them because of small confined space. So first of all, we've never quarantined healthy people ever. The goal is not the word quarantine, it's isolating sick people, not quarantining healthy people. So if somebody is sick and you isolate that person, that's how you stop the spread of disease. Quarantining everybody and not, you know, having herd immunity occur or over, you know, the over expectation of how many people were going to die from this has basically crushed the economy. And, you know, you and I are going to talk about what the mental health problem is with everyone who gets trapped indoors and loses their job or can't afford to eat, because that's when the scary stuff happens, like suicide and food, you know, pandemics. And this is really scary what they've done to this country. And, you know, what are they doing? And, you know, are they delaying the inevitable? I mean, how are we preparing more? And I can't wait to talk about that some more.
Yeah, I mean, so to go into, I've often thought that, right, the politicians are repeating what the media is demanding, right? The media is serving things that we want to watch, right? So they're like, all right, this gets the ratings. We push this out there for a lot of evolutionary reasons. We like to watch destruction, mayhem, and oh no, the sky's fallen. And is this just a perfect storm of it? The media saying this, then some people demanding it, then politicians saying, well, I guess we have to do something, and it just.
It's complicated. It's so complicated. First of all, there's no such thing as media anymore. I mean, you know, I forgot how old you are, but when I grew up, the journalists were really a respected profession. They went out and did their job and did research, and they didn't care what anybody thought about it. They spoke the truth back then. Now, they lose their jobs if they, you know, they get fired, they disappear, like if they say one wrong word. So their narrative is predetermined. And unfortunately, what happens and what's making this so difficult is the media is so politically biased. You have everybody who's, Republican only watches Fox and every Democrat watches the other stuff. And unfortunately, they never watch the other person's channel, so they don't get both sides of the story, so they become this believer. As soon as you hear a truth, that's the only truth you know, and you're not doctors. You don't have the ability to, like, assimilate all the information, so the conclusions that are drawn are incorrect, but it's force-fed to you, and it's scary when you show charts, or talk about death rates. I mean, to this day, it's not as deadly as the flu. I understand that the way they're doing the stats are making it look like it could be somewhat worse, but at the end of the day, I think not only is it going to be less than, I think they love to talk in negatives, because as somebody who believes in mental health, you don't talk in negatives, you talk in positives. And so instead of saying 99.8% of you are going to be okay, it's 50,000 are going to die or whatever percentage they're going to use as the death rate. There's no positive thing like you're going to be okay, but do this. And you know why? Because just look, I love our governor. You know, we both live in Florida. He's a great governor. But he made a coronavirus task force with no doctors and no masters of public health on the board.
What?
So, it's like, how do you make task force without doctors? And why is everybody like a microscope guy who doesn't have real hands-on experience with patients? When you're watching these other YouTube videos before they disappear or blah, 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 you know, they're doctors that are actually seeing the patients that are commenting, and they're believable because they're there and they're studying it. And they can tell you that this is inflammation and not a typical presentation. Whether this was just even made in a lab, we don't know. But what you're listening to, and my favorite thing, and I want to go back and show my text, is like Evolved in Fauci.
Yeah. And
you know what's great? He could say whatever he wants to, because he's never going to get in trouble, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but his wife is the head of bioethics at the NIH.
Oh, well, there you go.
And she's in charge of the human subject studies. So, you know, this little, like, I know it starts to get like really spooky. It's unfortunate we can't really do that much about it. I mean, at the end of the day, I get to the main point I'm going to want to make today, is that we've spent, or we're going to spend, you know, $8 trillion. We've already spent like $1.5 trillion. Okay, let me ask you a question. And this is just a question, because I don't know what you're going to say as your answer. Have you one time, that the people with risk factors are the ones getting 94-95% have an underlying condition, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, lung disease. You know that. Have you one time heard them say, hey, let's get everybody healthy, so when it comes back in the fall, you'll be better prepared for it?
No, let's find the drug. Let's find the drug.
We're going to save you. We'll let you out of that. We're going to card you to make sure you had your vaccine or show some antibody. By the way, another thing from that article I mentioned, after 3 weeks, you don't find the antibodies. So I don't know if that's the case for this time, but how are you going to prove immunity and then say, oh, we're going to test everybody, but then it might come back anyways? What's the purpose of testing everybody for antibodies if it's going to come back anyways?
Holy shit. Yeah. Fauci even said, he goes, it's definitely going to be back in the fall. He's just saying that. Can he say that definitively?
So here's the thing. I want you, as somebody who's been watching this lately, tell me one thing he said right. There's a virus out there. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I agree with you. Look, I don't even know if it's beta coronavirus or influenza C, which you haven't heard of. There are kind of, I can go down the rabbit hole of telling you things that, I think could have occurred. But here's the thing. You can't really trust somebody who is just putting expectations and that aren't coming true. Then at what point do you stop believing him? At what point do you, do we say, hey, it's going to come back? He says he's sure it's going to come back. Then they say he might come back. Well, I'm sure it's going to be there for a year and a half, like the people who represent the vaccines, it has to be there for a year and a half. But did you get a SARS-1 vaccine? Did that one come back? No,
never did. That one was, that was supposedly more contagious too, right?
Well, actually, they said it was less contagious because...
Well, I mean, less contagious, but more deadly.
So, and we don't have a stat to use because they didn't test healthy people, so we really don't know how contagious, even though they said it was less. But do you know how many people in the United States died from SARS the first time around? 7.
Wow.
Doesn't it seem like it was scary? Because, yes, a lot of people died in other countries. Yeah. 7 people died in the United States from it. So when you know that information and you know the way they treated SARS-1, wouldn't you start what we do for America the way that they did the first time around? What made them know differently?
This is going to fall in a lot of people's cognitive dissonance. that they can't, they wouldn't be, won't be able to. I struggle even, and you know me, I'm the guy that's been fighting the opiate epidemic. I've been fighting major issues like this, and even my cognitive dissonance when they go, no, they really, like, who's winning in this? Who's winning with the shutdown of the economy, the crashing of the economy? Who's winning in that?
You know, like I said, maybe it got ahead of them and got, you know, it was worse than they thought it was going to be. But it's the same people that always make the money, you know?
Yeah, I can lean toward you there that maybe they started something and went, oh, shit, it's gone. Oops, we didn't mean for it to get that far, or oops,
right.
Now we're here. And now they're just, they seem to be more reactive than anything. I've seen more reactive government than a proactive government.
Well, I think, here's the thing. I mean, I don't know how much you talk about this on your podcast. And, you know, I believe that there is a, you know, it's like if you thought George Bush was a president, not Cheney, you know, it's like there's always somebody behind you more powerful that you don't know and you'll never know their name. You know, I don't know if you ever talked about the Bilderbergs or any of these,
sure,
these Rockefellers and all that stuff behind the scenes. So, you know, I don't think Trump's part of their team. And so it's very weird what's happening. It's like they had a master plan and he's messing it up. But by the way, for the good of us, whether on purpose or not, I think he's thrown a wrench into the works. And I just don't think this is anything but nefarious.
Yeah, and to go back to your other point, you know, you haven't heard anything about, you know, vitamin cures, vitamin C, zinc, vitamin D. You've heard nothing about this.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I happen to be a huge vitamin fan. I mean, it's one of my passions in life. I spend my vitamin testing, and we'll talk about that on depression and vitamins and all that other stuff. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about it today. But here's the thing. There's no money for Big Pharma and vitamins, so why would they want to study something that can cure you? At some point, we do need to talk about how like methylfolate, the B9, is a lot of cause of depression, just a vitamin. You can't make your neurotransmitters without, you know, B9, B6, B12. If you don't make neurotransmitters, you either take a pharmaceutical medicine to help them work better or not get taken up as fast. That's what antidepressants are. Why don't you just make your neurotransmitters? And if you take traditional medicines, they block your vitamin pathways. Another handout I'll give you for your podcast at the bottom. But I will tell you this. I mean, we don't study these things because you know, Big Pharma doesn't have a vested interest to spend the money on it. They can't make money off of it. And I will mention one other thing. There's a podcast on someone who talks about how vitamin D blocks the receptor that's triggering all the lung problems. And vitamin D, which is, by the way, a hormone, vitamin D is probably the most important thing a human being can take. I don't want to only have to pick one thing, but if I had to, it would be vitamin D. I mean, you know, have you ever gone into an assisted living facility? We talked about this when we met. Have you ever gone into an assisted living facility and seen anyone in there with a tan?
Nope.
You know, they don't have any vitamin D. Their
well,
brains go
generally,
bad
or, yeah. Janice from New Jersey, who drinks 18 martinis a day, she's tan as leather. She's been sitting outside for 18
right.
years.
And her liver, who knows what it's like. Make sure she's not yellow. But at the end of the day, I mean, yeah. There are, it's so important for your health. These vitamins are big. You heard about zinc, you've heard about vitamin C, you've heard about vitamin A, you've heard these things. But you know, your immune system should fight off viruses. And so what we should be doing, and by the way, just put this into perspective. I mean, this is an important stat because this is a real stat. 1,600 people die every day from cardiovascular disease and 1,600 people die every day from cancer. That's 3,200 people a day. Do the math. Why can't you spend? Let me ask you this. If I told you I could hire 1,000,000 scientists to come up with cures for what we have, the big diseases, and I gave them $1,000,000 each, do you think we'd get to some cures?
Yep. Quick.
Well, that's what $1 trillion is. Why don't you spend $1 trillion on curing some of the things to get people healthy? I mean, you have, if it's coming back in the fall and you have 6 months, all we should be talking about is what people should be doing to get their immune systems up so that they can fight off the infection and not have negative outcomes. But not one word is said. And by the way, we need to elect all new politicians because apparently they're too elderly and frail to show up for their job in Congress. And either that or PPE doesn't work, which it doesn't, by the way. That mask thing is like tough. I want everybody to know. Cloth masks are a load of whatever. You can go buy them for $25 when an N95, which you can't get, costs $1, but go buy, it doesn't do anything. So that, oh, you have to wear a mask when you go out, we're going to arrest you. That's ridiculous. It may even be bad for you.
Wow. So walk into that a little bit. So they're why are they pushing out an order? I mean, it's a mandatory order on a mask in public right now.
No idea. It's like almost like CYA. Listen, we're telling everyone they can go out, but we told you to wear a mask. Maybe some people didn't. So if it does spread like crazy, we don't want to be responsible. It's just a tough spot. You know, look, I mean, the politicians, don't forget, they're paid by the drug companies in a lot of the circumstances, or, you know, or they're, you know, they go on the boards for them. I mean, you look at the Murdoch kid, he's on one of the pharmacy boards. The people at the top, I heard a word the other day. I love to call us sheep because that's what we are. But I mean, you probably heard the word before, but we're sheeple.
Yep. Sheep. Yeah. So it's really this cover your ass thing. Wear a mask. This is mandatory. I mean, I think I know the answer to this already. This 6 feet. How bullshit is the 6 feet?
I mean, have you ever seen this? I haven't seen this in a while. I was going to start to Google it, but have you ever seen someone do that sneeze where it goes like 25 feet?
Yes. Dude, I've seen all these videos online that people are depicting wind streams of people that are running on bikes. It's up to 65 feet that it lasts. Like, I'm seeing all these crazy charts and stuff. So this 6 feet is bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like somebody said a funny line. Sorry for if it's a gross joke, but like, does your underwear cover the smell of a fart?
You know? Right.
I mean, it's like masks are the best when they're real masks to prevent a sick person from spreading it when they sneeze more than it does even protecting you. But, you know, these N95 masks, now they have like new versions of it, which cost like a dollar. That's what I would pay if I could get them. Even I'm a doctor, but I can't get them myself. But if I could get them, now they're charging like $5 for it. Everybody's got their hand in the pool of money that's going on the top end. And, you know, look, I mean, this is so bad. We don't want an all corporate America. Small businesses are what give us our individuality, but they're all gone. You know, Trump has said some funny things, but he has no filter and he says what's on his mind. And one of the most amusing things that he said was, he's like, oh, don't worry, the restaurants are all come back. They may have a new owner, but yeah, they'll come back.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I'm the owner of a comedy club, man, and we had to push our business out a little ways before we get back to it. It certainly has crippled the backbone of America in middle and small businesses, for sure.
I'm going to speak to some of the things because, you know, you stand up for people's rights and you stand up for this stuff, but it does affect you even if you pretend it does, because there's a lot of people who don't believe you want to go back to work. But I want you to turn on the TV next time you see a rally. And just watch how everyone in the rally is standing 6 feet apart. They're like, we want to go back to work, but they're all standing 6 feet apart. And then, or they have them in their cars, and they're, you know, they have their distancing there. So because you're reasonably scared of something that could be potentially bad for you. And the thing is that we don't really know if we are healthy or not. We kind of know getting it the worst, but we really don't know if it can affect us, because they always have that one young person that did it, but we don't know if they were vaping or whatever else.
That's what scared the shit out of me. Is I in the Washington Post, it came out that they saw these young patients all show up and they had blood clots and were showing stroke symptoms from this.
It's important. So this is an inflammatory condition, and so it's causing things to cause inflammation or other things that are happening in the body because of this inflammation. And that's why ultimately, you know, I had sent you a post that I said exactly what's going to be in the cure for this, or at least the cure, like the treatment if you're really ill. And I literally told you it was going to be an IL-6 inhibitor,
yep,
or a TNF inhibitor. And those are stopping the inflammation. And guess what? The thing you heard at EMRA is the other thing you're talking about with the antiviral that you're hearing about, because it's an inflammatory condition and that's what's triggering these other things from happening. So if we look at it that way, then we should be treating them with anti-inflammatories as soon as they get the first signs, not shoving them on ventilators, by the way, which has negative outcomes.
So I'm sure you've seen it, the idea that taking ibuprofen and some of these anti-inflammatories were progressing the virus further into the lungs or making it worse.
You know, so I have questions too. And the problem is that I'm not the guy looking under the microscope, and I'm not the, you know, one doing the autopsies or anything. And so I have to go off what information I can gather. And so, you know, that's why I always go back to the beginning, get your immune system healthy, and then you have a better chance of responding to stuff. I don't know the answer to that. You know, we've always treated fever, but at the end of the day, fever is our natural body's mechanism of fighting infection. And so I'm not even saying the IL-6 inhibitor is necessarily good. Now, maybe for a late case, but at the end of the day, I knew what was coming. I knew what they were going to come out for it, because in a very severe case, that then it's warranted. But are they going to use it ahead of time? When's the point to use it? I don't know the answer. But yeah, that's a great question. So I tell people, don't treat the fever. Take a lukewarm bath, sweat it out, you know, like you know, people have been told in the past. And if you have to take something because your like headache's so, you know, then I guess use Tylenol because there's no anti-inflammatory in Tylenol.
Yeah. All right. So, is this because maybe this is a new virus? Our bodies are just reacting differently to it based on our immune systems, and it's bringing out things. For me, this has been the terrifying part for me, right? As you made a great point, we don't know if we're sick, right? If we have some underlying genetic issue or something we don't know, you know, some predisposition, and then this thing hits us. And for some people, it has all these different symptoms. It shows in different ways. Or is this just kind of the media giving us the scary part to this?
Well, first of all, I think that the deaths are way overpopulated. You know, I hope I don't mess up this quote because it was on Michael Noah's podcast yesterday. Because of coronavirus, you die because of coronavirus. Mm. In other words, they test for it, you die of a heart attack. So you pump up the number that way. I mean, someone literally could die in their house, which 6%, I think it is, of people are dying at home. And then they find out that they had COVID, but they could have had a stroke or anything else. So the stat is difficult to get to the bottom of. But, you know, you have a reasonable concern. Look, I don't know who it's going to take out. You don't know who it's going to take out. But once again, getting your immune system the healthiest it can be is what fights inflammation. It's what fights infections. And it's what we really have to start changing the conversation to. So, you know, should you take Advil? Should you do all these things? We don't really know the answer. So what I'm trying to do is take scientists that I trust that are not owned by big pharma, and I like take their information, like vitamin D being important because it blocks the receptor that's causing the problem in the lungs. I really don't want to go into the pathophysiology of the renin-aldosterone angiotensin system.
Where does that play
with
sunlight?
I will tell you, Wikipedia that, because at the end of it, you're going to start to see the names of drugs that are vaccines and treatments, and then you can start to put two and two together like the rest of us have.
Yeah, so where's sunlight playing this, the vitamin D role?
So, you know, first of all, as you get older, it's very hard to even convert the vitamin D to the form that you need. So when they say sunlight, you're supposed to have like 30 minutes a day with 40% of your body exposed, no sunblock on, if you're going to get it from sunlight. Otherwise, you have to get it from fortified foods, which are usually not good for you, but like, you know, vitamin D fortified cereal and milk and all these other things. So, you know, I just supplement with vitamin D, by the way. It's like $3 or $4 a month. It's like the least expensive vitamin when you buy it. And I think vitamin D is super important. And you have to get the level to 75, and you should get blood tests on that to see where your level goes, because they don't tell you have to get to 75. They used to call 20 to 50 normal because they make sure that they keep you down in the, hey, you can get sick range.
Wow.
Now
whoa,
to
yeah, whoa, whoa. You just breezed right over that shit. Hold on, wait.
I talk fast.
No, that was a major. Yeah. So what you're saying is our levels of vitamin D need to be up to 75, but they wouldn't tell you as long. They called 50. What'd you say, 25 to 50 in normal range?
So basically, a normal vitamin D level has always been 20 to 50. You know, but then America starts getting made fun of when the rest of the world starts saying that's silly. So 75 seems to be the optimal level for vitamin D. So, and by the way, vitamin D used to be only covered one time. That's the only lab by Medicare. You know, it's super inexpensive. People think, you know, calcium causes osteoporosis. It's a vitamin D problem. People don't understand. And now, you know, don't forget sunblock. But the vitamin D level getting optimal is very important for your health. So instead of saying 50 to 100 is the new normal, they just say 20 to 100. Now, most doctors who practice traditional medicine who don't get into the wellness world look at that, they see a level of 25 or 35, it falls in the normal range, and they're like, oh, your vitamin D is fine. But they don't know what an optimal level is, and your goal is to get to an optimal level. So they don't get their patients to take vitamin D to get it up there. And for $3 or $4 a month, you have something that protects your brain. And by the way, you know, not approved by the FDA, what I'm about to say, but fight cancer. But, you know, I have to put the disclaimer in there, whatever that full disclaimer is. And, you know, and it's great. So great for your bones, great for your brain, great for your immune system, you know.
Yeah, so I've seen some reports about inflated numbers. So inflated numbers coming out that we've inflated them. I've also seen reports that we didn't report enough that are not, like, I swear it was a week ago I saw that it was actually 50% more than it is, and now I'm seeing reports that the numbers actually, well, they've probably been inflated now.
I think the reports are 50 times more than it is, but just to clarify, let me ask you a question. When you hear these words, this the highest spike ever in a day, where there's so many new cases. Does that scare you or make you happy?
Yeah, you're terrified.
No.
Wait, the highest in a day?
The higher this number goes, the more people that have it, the better you should feel.
Is that
I'll
we
tell
talking
you why.
Are we talking herd immunity here?
Number one, that means a lot of people have it and will, yes, herd immunity. But the other
The
thing
reaching
is,
the peak.
if you take the death number at the bottom and you put how many people have it at top, it makes the death rate not as scary. So if 50 million people have it and only 50,000 die, now you're like way less than the flu. So when they say this, you should be happy they're saying this because great, that means you're infected. You're not hearing new numbers go up in the hospitals. You're not hearing the death rate. It's kind of stagnant. That's the best news. But yet they don't say it that way. They're like, oh, this many new cases. You should be scared you're going to get it. Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to be like broken record. Back to the beginning. You might get it. You might be in a risk group, but get your immune system up. Start spending the money to educate people on how to get rid of diabetes, how to eat better, how your gut function is important, and taking vitamins. I mean, simple things that you can teach in a 1 hour lecture and put programs online. People are stuck at home. Put some exercise. Go learn about either a keto diet or any other diet. Or and maybe that my friend in the keto world is going to kill me, but that's lifestyle modification. It's actually your body's process, ketosis. But but eating the keto diet, so to speak. So do something that improves your health in the 6 months so you don't have to worry because, elderly, well, you can't change your age. So someone is going to call you and say, oh, you can't change your old. Well, there's the young old and there's the old old. And there's the 80-year-old that's like he's 60 and there's the 80-year-old that's like he's 100. And so there is the age does matter. To what extent, I don't know because of the receptors in the lung at that age because there's not a study out there I could find. But I will tell you that there are plenty of people who are older who are in good health because they take care of themselves and do vitamins and get out there and exercise and what and so on. So if they take home anything from how fast I talk from during the podcast, it's get your health the most optimal it can be before the second supposed wave comes by.
So the I do intermittent fasting. I've read a few articles, few papers, and research on it. Lifts the immune system, strengthens the immune system with a 14-hour fast, eating in a 10-hour window. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I love intermittent fasting. It's the best way to burn fat for energy. It helps you lose weight. I think intermittent fasting is, if you don't know about it, people should read on it. But adding to that, doing a 1, 2, or 3 day fast, a full fast, is
Wow.
also very stimulating for the immune system. So if you're someone who has health conditions now and you're sick and you have either IBS or anything, you know what? It doesn't matter. If you have any autoimmune disease in particular, do a 1 or 2 day fast and see how good you feel and then go into the intermittent fasting. Do it as a jump start. I'm actually, in okay shape, but I'm doing one last Monday. So I think it's good to do once in a while as well.
Yeah, I've heard a couple people that fight, quotes, hypoglycemia, right, or have turned around some issues of diabetes doing that and some blood sugar issues as well.
Well, I won't claim to have the biggest population in the world. I have a concierge type of practice in wellness. You know how many diabetics I have in my practice?
Zero.
Zero.
So you're really turning around, D2 and things like that.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those things that I don't want your podcast turned off because of what I do with bioidentical hormones and whatnot, and I'll leave it at that. But at the end of the day, if you get rid of visceral fat, if you lose weight, you stop insulin resistance. And if you stop insulin resistance, you've just stopped what diabetes is. And so
Wow.
losing weight and eating right is anybody can get anybody can get rid of type 2 diabetes. Now, if you have a type where you're born that where you need insulin, that's a different story. So to clarify, type 2 diabetes, it can go away. And I've watched it go away in a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's an epidemic, if you will, that's happening here, and you don't see much people fighting for to we're not shutting down the economy for type 2 diabetes, and that's a serious killer in this country.
Okay, for the first time, you're going to hear me blame people instead of the government. So I'm going to do that. People have to take control of their own health.
Yeah.
And the government can help that along. They won't because one of the biggest industries in this country, maybe even bigger than Big Pharma, is the sugar industry, the high fructose corn syrup industry. But there should be a sugar tax. I think a candy bar should cost $3. I think a regular size soda should cost $3 and put the money back in. Because you're never going to be able to tell people what to do because not everyone's going to listen. In fact, most people don't until they're really ill or they're sick of doctors saying, hey, what do I do now? And they actually search for the cure and get themselves better. But you put a sugar tax out there, that's going to pay for some stuff. And at least they'll have to pay the penalty if they don't. But maybe it'll be at least a deterrent. I think a sugar tax should be mandatory out there because the diabetes is a horrible epidemic and it's horrible for your immune system. And they're in the risk population for people who may have a bad outcome from this.
Yeah. So to go back to COVID, I'm going to play a devil's advocate on this side, right?
Yeah.
So if 45,000 people, 60,000 people, whatever their number is of that many people dying, or comparative to the flu, right? Same amount of people or less that die of the flu. Isn't it still a thing that's now killing 45,000 more people?
Well, I mean, they're not even testing for the flu. Like, we don't even, they actually say on the CDC site, like, the flu numbers may be off this year because we're busy testing for the other thing. So, look, I mean, I'm not really sure what your question was at. Yes, look, the same people you're protecting from COVID are the same people you have to protect from the flu. I think they keep not saying that, but it's the same risk population. These are the risk populations who get a regular cold turning into a pneumonia. Look, I mean, I know it's a different type of pneumonia. You know, that's a viral pneumonia. You know, when you're dealing with the flu, this seems to be some sort of an inflammation pneumonia. And I will tell you this as an aside, because I have been doing a lot of reading. I mean, I think that the answer could be a generic HIV drug. You know, the way that these work against like viruses and inflammation and all of that stuff and stop binding. But none of the ones that are out now will be the one that they use, because, like I said, it's generic.
Can't rebrand it.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you can't rebrand and package the drug that's already out. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no. I don't know that there was a point I was going to get to. I was just, I think you were concerned that we're adding on top of a number where people already die. But when you total the numbers, you're not getting anywhere near the diseases that kill people all the time every day. And I mean, you know, I won't get into some of these foundations, but where's all the billions of dollars they have and like how little they've done to cure things like cancer? And, you know, I don't want to get into a CBD THC, you know, conversation right now, what that does. But these things are studied. You just don't know that they're studied, and they don't release those studies. And look, there's no doubt in, I think, anybody's mind. I don't think I'm enlightening anybody that Big Pharma plays a role. We are great at treating diseases as a country. And some of them, sometimes you have a disease and it needs a treatment because it's too late to do the prevention side of it. But this is alternative medicine. The traditional medicine has gone back, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And I'm so tired of them calling wellness doctors and people in that space, you know, alternative medicine. They're not. We are. We're the alternative medicine. That's traditional medicine. And we need to get back to the traditional medicine, the Eastern medicine. They've had roots and herbs and everything else that have cured things for centuries and centuries and enough to go on where we should be free to use whatever we want to. It's a little dissect from what we're talking about today. But I believe that every, you know, and this is actually an interesting, you know, thing, because you might disagree on this one, but I believe that you have the right to control what you do to your own body in every way, shape, or form, because it's your one life to live, as long as it doesn't affect others. And so I feel, you know, pretty strong about that. I understand, you know, you might have a comment about that, but I do believe you have the right to do whatever you want to. And you know, maybe the right should be for an adult, because, you know, the children these days and access is a little bit different. But at the end of the day, you're an adult. You can go off to war. You should be able to do, you know, at that point, you should be able to, you know, vote, go off to war, do whatever you want to your body. And as long as it doesn't affect other people. And that's why we have laws and penalties and things that are criminal. You know?
I agree with you. I've been the one that say make every single drug legal. You want to make heroin, make it all legal. I was dead. I said that when I was on Rogan. Make it all legal. That's how you start there. Make it all legal. So I'm a fan of that for sure. But to go back, a question is, that's where I see a lot of people, like I try to spend less time on Twitter as possible, right? It's where you're seeing arguments where you're saying, all right, you're free to do what you want, but if you are sick or you hold the antibodies, you're asymptomatic and you go out there, you're infecting other people for your own freedom.
Well, if you're sick and you have the antibodies, what they're saying is that you don't have to worry about catching it or spreading it because you've been quarantined for the X amount of days that they said being 7 to 14, it changes a little. But they're saying you're not contagious and you have antibodies, so you're not at, you know, it's not worrisome for you to catch it. That would be fine, well, and good, except for a couple of things. Number one, they just said it's coming back. So how long do those antibodies last? And if you go back to that article I showed you, it says you can't detect those antibodies in a couple weeks after the infection. So if they test you at the right time, who knows 3 weeks later if you have it or not? What are we going to, like, you know, live as hermits for the rest of our life? I mean, eventually Elon Musk will have us headed that way, but with everything automated. But at the end of the day, the time is not now, and it's depressing. I mean, I have a high school, you know, son who's not going to get to graduate, not going to get to do prom, not going to get to do his tennis districts for something that may very well be a cold, you know? And I think that in order for us to get some reasonable answers to our questions, we need to have more information being released. Hey, you're more at risk if you're, you know, Asian or Black. And by the way, you know, Blacks have higher ACE in their lungs. And I'm sorry if someone corrects me when I'm wrong, but that's what I studied. So they're having more deaths. And almost every time I see a picture of someone who died, they're Black, except for the one white doctor that they showed who either committed suicide or something more nefarious. Depends, you know,
so there's an actual biological link to
that. Well, there may be. That's my point, is they literally should be giving these stats out there for all doctors to evaluate, because we're either front of the line or able to assimilate information. I don't want the lab guy that may have vested interests or work for a big pharma or be related to the WHO in any way. You know, the way you come to proper decisions and treatments is gathering the information and putting it together in a certain way, or having a scientific journalist or somebody do that for you, and then you pick your battles, because you could probably make an equal argument for both sides of the coin. There's anti-vax people and vax people. I don't believe hepatitis B needs to be given to a one-day-old, because they're not working on an ambulance like an EMT. What's their risk exposure for that at one day? Let's get them while we can, make sure we collect the money. I mean, or you're going to have people say, like, oh, I believe everybody should get all their vaccinations and whatever. So people can create convincing arguments for each side of the coin. First of all, I don't believe it should be mandatory. It's my body. I should do whatever I want to my body. And someone says, well, if you don't get your measles shots, you can give it to me. Well, if you get your measles vaccine, shouldn't it work? Well, am I going to give it to you if it works?
Yeah, I've often thought that. Why all the vaccinated parents with their kids? I'm like, well, you're vaccinated.
It's insane. It's like, you know, I'm alive. I think I had 8 immunizations. I think it's like 72 now.
Yeah.
You know, like, what happened? Are we that sick of a population? And if that's true, why are we so sick? Let's once again work on the baseline of health for our people. It's tough, but people also have to take accountability for their own actions. You know, so if you are sick, you should isolate. You should lock yourself in a room. Don't touch your family. Don't go out ahead of time. Don't, you know, go to the grocery store. Take the responsibility as a human being and be ethical and do that. But you know, I still have one thing I wonder about, and I don't know the answer, but I'll tell you what aggravates me is, if they say asymptomatic people are spreading it, I really want to know how. Because they're like trying to get to the point where, like, if you're talking, you could give it to somebody. And I'm like, well, how close are you? Like, so this goes back to like quarantining yourself. If someone's sick and you keep everyone in the house, everyone's going to get sick, right? Versus getting out there and getting a herd immunity and whatnot. But if you're sick, how am I going to get it from you? You have to do something, right? Like what? How am I going to get it from you? Name one way I can get it from you.
Sneeze on me.
If you cough or you sneeze, but that's a symptom. Then you're not asymptomatic.
Okay, I gotcha.
So how's an asymptomatic person spreading it to everybody? Are they? So then they're like, if you cough in your hand and it lives on the surface. Okay, well, let's just say that's true. Well, then I think then probably almost every adult who drives a car already has coronavirus, because I watch it all day long, and I watch it every flu season, that people love to touch the gas pump. Of all the things they forget,
I hate
they touch their door
it,
handle, they touch, they go to Publix, wherever they go. But they always touch a gas pump, and nobody wears gloves. There's no gloves out there for you to wear. And so everybody, like, in that event alone would have it. So, like, you know, I don't know about this asymptomatic carrier thing. You know, if you have a symptom, stay home. That's worrisome. But
you even mentioned a while ago, back in March, we chatted briefly about not going to get tested.
Yeah, I mean, what's the purpose? I mean, if they can prove to me, if I have antibodies, I'm cured forever, and that may help people out by me going out of the house, okay, fine. But how are you going to track it? You know, this isn't Nazi Germany where you're going to ask for everybody's papers. I don't know what's going to go in vaccines at some point. You know, that's another topic that's scary. But at the end of the day, what's the value of the test? If you're positive, what changes in your life? And if you're negative, what changes in your life? We seem to be in the same spot either way. And if it's going to come back, what's the purpose of finding out if you have antibodies? Like, is it going to be gone? I mean, if Fauci says it's coming back, why have we done one test? And by the way, not for nothing, there's so many false negatives and false positives in a test, it's not even accurate. Do you remember, like, they were talking about how that thing was shoved up their nose on the news?
Yep.
You know, I'm like, well, you know, a nasopharyngeal swab, that probably better one, doesn't go up. It goes straight back in your nair. Nobody knows that. So when they talk about pain, I'm like, were the people even doing the test right? I'm not sure.
Holy shit. They actually should go up and in, not up.
It depends on which test, because they didn't say it on the news, but it shouldn't really hurt that bad if you're just doing a nasal swab. But it may hurt if you are doing a nasopharyngeal swab. You know, that's where you're supposed to go. So I
Do
wonder if
you
they're
know the
counting or
stats on the
using it
accuracy?
correctly.
Do you know any stats on the accuracy of the testing?
They don't know. But guess what? You're going to send it to a home. You think people are going to get that test right? The only thing that detects this is really that blood test that's done in a hospital. These other tests are hokey pokey. I mean, it's great for people who want stock in these labs, but look, I have a flu machine that the hospital has in my office. It tells me you have, you know, flu A or flu B. It doesn't tell me what strain. And that's a hospital machine. Like, what machine are they getting for everybody to do all these tests on everybody? That's going to tell you if you have regular coronavirus. Or at some, or you have the other. I know there's a ways with reagents to maybe know, but we don't know enough about it. I think that the testing is silly anyways, because you know you can't play both sides of the coin. How are you going to test everybody anyways? And how do you know if it lasts or it's going to come back? By the way, coronavirus come back every year, and people are saying coronaviruses. So how are we getting immunity to this one? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it made sense to me to say, all right, go put yourself in a risky place, a drive-through testing center, a hospital, what have you, where sick people probably have been. And then when you're sick, they're going to tell you to fucking go home.
Yeah, you know, they had an MSNBC, I think, was a story where they talked about a girl who had it in the early stages. They put her in the general waiting room where she was pretty much alone, and then they found out that she had it. So security escorted her into a room, and she was the only seat left in that room. So now you put people in there who might be potentially have or just worried or just want to get tested. Now you stuck someone who actually had it in that room. Hence again, why putting people in small spaces is not good. Then she got to the back, and this wasn't a horror story. She got out 2 days later type of story. But she talked about how she was really only the third positive that day. And then I hear that, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she was in the room with so many other people. Like, you know. But then getting the numbers up is good for people making the treatment or the cure or the vaccine, you know.
Yeah, this is anytime I'm watching the news, which I try to do less and less every day. It's they seem like everyone's getting tested like this is some sort of cure. They're talking about the testing as if this is a cure. We've tested 500,000 people. We plan to test 40. What's the Cuomo? We're 40,000 people a day. We're testing. We're testing. We're testing. We got testing centers up. Now that we're testing, we're going to be okay.
No. So here's the reason. You know why they're testing? Because the government got in the budget $35 billion for testing. So until that money's spent, there's going to be testing, 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 testing.
So if you
But
want
you're
the money, you get the
right.
test. Are hospitals also linked to some stimulus money due to the treatment of COVID?
Of course they are. But guess what? The president said, I'm sorry if I'm this cool, but he said all COVID testing and treatment is covered, even by the insurance companies. The insurance companies will get, you know, cover it, but then who's going to reimburse them? You know, guess what? Remember I said it's probably going to cost 10, or let's see if I'm right. It's going to cost 10 or 20 grand for the new cure that they're testing right now. Who do you think is going to pay for that? The government just said they're going to pay for all the treatment.
So let's make it
I
expensive as
think
possible and subsidized by them.
this is big, big, big money. And you know, look, it sounds so horrible when you know, you hear a doctor saying, "Oh, it's all about money." And you know, I'm not making light of the fact that people can get sick of this. I'm not making light of the fact to isolate if you get sick. But this is over the top because the ramifications of everything outside of COVID, between the lost jobs and the economy and the other illnesses and people not seeking treatment and people not filling their regular medicines and suicides that are going to happen, there's 14,000 extra suicide. That sounds weird. 14,000 extra suicide during the 2008 collapse. This is going to be 3x that. I mean, this is a real problem. And you know, the faster you get people to the beach and stop social isolation, I mean, the stress crushes your immune system,
Yeah.
and you don't respond well to things, and people can't lock themselves. And I mean, this is like a taste of prison, basically. And so you need to start talking in positives, allay fears, and you know, it's unfortunate. We can't do anything about big pharma. People who get sick, we hope this medicine works for them. But at the end of the day, they've gone about this obviously because they're even admitting it the exact opposite way that they should. They need to let us out there, and until they give us more facts, more proof of what's occurring, and they actually still need to once again start talking about how to build up the immune system. How with $1 trillion, you can actually study vitamins. They're not going to be that expensive to study. You can study how it is to teach people to eat right, make a video. You can give some free things to the health podcast that exists out there on getting rid of autoimmune disease. If you start educating, you know, you have a whole summer where you're going to not have colleges open, make everybody learn about nutrition, the food pyramid's upside down. I mean, I look at like the American Diabetic Association, you know, they tell everyone to eat whole grains. I'm like, oh, great, give sugar to the diabetic. I mean,
yeah.
Carbs and sugar, I mean, where did that come from? But like, it's our medical, they don't even teach doctors nutrition. I'll include myself, even though I don't write synthetic medicines very often, but at the end of the day, we are glorified pharmaceutical reps. They don't exist anymore. They pigeonholed it so doctors have to see so many patients, and patients have the expectation to get a medicine, and doctors in their time schedule have the easy answer to give them that gives the quick fix. But nobody cures anything anymore because the government doesn't want to spend any money on wellness. They don't even cover wellness labs. I mean, I just told you some stats about my own clinic with that and other health things, and my patients are healthy. But like they don't pay for their like some of their labs, things that I think are way more relevant than cholesterol, which I'm hoping we talk about that someday, or I will on my podcast. But
The cholesterol is fun. I've covered that a few times on here, and what that really means and what that leads to. But you know, there's so many people that are terrified right now to go out to do anything. They're terrified. I have fears even, you know, about the beaches reopening here in Florida tomorrow. Everybody going back out there. I'm hearing people talk about, well, let's see what happens. Let them all go out there and we'll have another surge because we opened too early. And, you know, it's going to cause this whole surge pandemic all over again and come back again. I know we've talked a lot about some things to do, what to do. I mean, maybe speak to the fears of those people, even myself, about the reopening, about rejoining society, about, you know, things like that, about that, maybe how deadly the virus is, what this is, this really is.
Yeah, we don't know. But my opinion is that this is going to be the same as the flu. We've never locked ourselves in from the flu. We've never run away from everybody before and been 6 feet apart. Even, you know, offices have someone sick in there all the time. Oh, yeah, someone else next to me was sick and then they get sick. But nobody ever doesn't go to work ever again, you know, because colds are always out there. And so what I would say to people is, first of all, if you're sick, stay home, isolate. That we know is helpful for everybody. And you don't want to get your family members or coworkers sick. As far as stepping out there, masks don't work. Don't feel like that's going to give you any comfort in that. They just don't, unless you get one of the N95 masks, and maybe that helps a little. But what I would tell people are, fine, use the standard precautions. We can stop shaking hands. You don't have to hug everybody. Hello. Don't share drinks. Watch the close contact. Just, you know, use it because we don't have enough information yet. But I think sitting at home is not the answer because there's just, I mean, how are you going to afford to eat? How are you, you know, if you're a person at risk, elderly, diabetic, okay, maybe you might want to try to work from home or stay home more. But the young, healthy population, it should be perfectly fine to get our workforce going again. And I think, you know, if you're generally a healthy person, I think you go out there and do your thing. And if you're a little unsure about that or you know you could be healthier, you need to start to go back. And I'll give you a handout maybe that you can post in the next week or something that, you know, what vitamins are good and things of that nature. But get yourself healthy again. Stop eating processed food. You know, Monsanto is not your friend. Donald Rumsfeld is not your friend. You know, I mean, you know, you have to take this opportunity to be healthy and get your immune system the best it can be. Because if it's coming back and if it's going to be worse and if, well, there's nothing wrong with getting yourself healthy. I mean, it's a good thing. So, you know, take that point home for that. But it's hard not to be scared because it is like the fear mongering that goes on out there. But I really believe that we're going to get through this. I believe generally healthy people will generally do well. And once again, I can't give you an exact number, but right now it's 99% plus of people do well. So you have a 99% chance of doing okay. And you can't live your life in fear of 1%. This isn't Ebola. And I'll mention one other thing that maybe will give you a, you know, let them breathe a sigh of relief here. If this was serious, like Ebola or something really bad, smallpox, whatever, would the president of the United States be in a bunker, protected from everybody, or would he be out in front of everybody as the most powerful man in the world? Would he really be out in front of that many people, you know, different staff, constant contact, you know, get on a helicopter or a plane and go anywhere? I think absolutely not. But more to the point, would the second most powerful man in the world be standing right behind him in all the press conferences? I mean, wouldn't you at least distance him a little if it's that scary? Yeah. I mean, those sorts of clues kind of tell you there's either A, a treatment, or B, this is a little bit of hype. And so I looked at this and I just can't buy into it. I'm sorry, I'm not like mean about people passing away, but that happens every day. And if we really care about the number and not the greater good, then there's other things we should be focusing those trillions of dollars on, like curing cancer and cardiovascular disease, because you'll save more lives with that. And I just, they're just the, you know, the numbers, they just can't make them work. They can't fudge them enough, and they can't change them every day, you know?
Wow. I want to thank you for that. I like that last inning is if we care more about the number, then we should be treating other things as well. We didn't talk about it, but I do want to go to the mental health aspect, being that we include that a lot in this podcast. And you hit on it from the beginning, right? And as I know, good mental health includes socializing, having environmental connections, being connected to people, not isolating. Hell, isolation is a symptom of depression, right? And so they're telling us to do an actual mental health depressing symptom, which is isolate yourself. So the fact that we are isolating, it crushes the immune system. Domestic violence has gone up, child abuse is going up, divorces have gone up. The impact that this is having on people's anxiety, people that are already stressed from anxiety right now, that can't get away from the news anywhere, can't leave their home. They're also thinking about where does the next meal come from, the food. I mean, the mental health aspect to the quarantine is, I think we probably haven't even seen what's really and how bad it really is.
Yeah, and I would say one thing to you, so I'm going to call you out on this. You said you're scared to go out there and go to the beach. Well, guess what? You just gave every reason to get over that fear and go out there and go to the
Oh,
beach. Because
I go. I'm out there. I'm just scared.
I'm just, I'm making a little light of it. But the thing is that you know what grounding is, and that's walking along the beach barefoot and so on and so forth. And that's what people need to do. I mean, you're out in the environment. Look, it's not like there's like this tornado of flu or viral germs going out there and you're going to get smacked with it. Fine, keep a little distance. I mean, like I told you before, people are out there complaining about it and still keeping 6 feet apart while they're saying get back to work. I mean, but fine, keep 6 feet apart. Wear a mask if it makes you feel more comfortable, if it gives you that confidence to go out there like it's doing something, great. But at the end of the day, I think everybody needs to get out there unless you have those particular risk factors. This is too crushing. I think like the longer we wait, the harder it's going to be to come back from this. And I already see some bad things that still will happen, even at the point we're at, not medically, like economically, and then the social part of that, and the suicide part of that, and the depression part of that, and there's a lot of negatives. What was the saying again? Like is the cure worse than the disease? We need to get out there. I can't. I, if you if, you know, prove me wrong. That guy says, prove me wrong. Let the government show me something that says, hey, stay inside because they keep saying this number's going to hit this and blah 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 blah. But they're not giving us like real information and real numbers, and you're getting parts of stories and how can two different news networks get it opposite? Is the truth in the middle? Is it way on one side, way on the other? I mean, we have enough months that have gone by where we should have some more answers. And if they're not telling you anything, maybe there's nothing to tell.
Shit. Yeah, good point. Where does herd immunity, is that even possible for us to do? I hear about this often. How does the herd immunity thing really work?
I think like not to go into depth into that, it's basically the status of 82% of the population test positive for a disease. It just can't spread anymore.
Jesus.
But it's hard to just do that with a virus because once again, the antibodies, we have to know that they last forever. We don't even know if they last past 3 weeks from the last time. But at the end of the day, I'm looking at it differently. I'm looking at it like, hey, this is a cold, and a normal healthy person should get over a cold. Every cold has risk factors to turn to pneumonia in certain people, and they're going to get sick. But that's not going to change based upon the fact that this is a COVID virus or any other cold. I just haven't seen that information yet that proves that wrong. I mean, I try not to get too much in the pathophysiology of this on this podcast because it's even hard to put it into layman's terms, to be honest with you. But like I said, I'll give you some suggestions of podcasts to listen to get into that. But at the end of the day, we are opening up, and I hope it's quicker. And I just can't see the reason people need to lock themselves indoors unless they have a specific good reason, you know?
Yeah, so man, is there anything else we haven't covered? Anything you wanted to talk about, or we wanted to get to for sure that was either COVID-19 related or just information people you think need to know at this time?
randomly and interestingly as one of my first podcasts ever, and I made some notes. Like, you hit them all without me having to look down. And I just looked down, and I don't think I have anything left. I think the gas tank, I got empty the gas tank on it. But, you know, hopefully I didn't talk too fast. But
no, I love it, man. I love the information. I think people need to hear this. I think people are inundated with fear. Are inundated with it, and it's so much to where you see that side that is demanding you to stay home is angry at people that aren't staying home or saying things like, you know, go out there, live, don't open the, now we're opening too soon, we're idiots. Hashtag Florida morons was trending, you know, not long ago, right, that they're out in the beach. And so you have this polarization of this. If this, for me, this seems so reflective of our current state of our country anyway, that we're polarized politically, and now with this, imagine that, this virus, we're polarized, where it's stay home, quarantine, if you love other people, you stay in your house, your grandparents had to go to war, you get to stay home and watch Netflix, stop bitching, stay the hell at home, and then the other half going, storming the Michigan Capitol with machine guns, right, as a Michigan militia.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I'm a broken record, I tell my patients that, get your immune system healthy, and get out there and do it. And, you know, if you want, you can start going conspiracy theory on everything. How come only the Democratic states have epicenters? It's just like, you know, it's like, you know, you can sit there and pick these things apart on so many levels. Look, I'm curious if this has any man-made portion to the virus, you know, and it's created in a lab. I mean, after that thing in Wuhan and SARS-1, the whole point of that was like, make the labs tighter, you know, make sure nothing escapes from the lab. And, you know, let's get that in place. And then it happened again with swine flu. And now it's happening again. So how many times is something going to get out of line? How many times does the monkey escape, so to speak? And you know, we could have fun with it. Like, how come it's a different animal all the time? We have a bat, we have a dog, we have swine, we have a bird. It's like, yeah. Wow, these animals. Yeah, we should just kill all nature, you know, and then we'll be okay, right? We kill all the vectors, right? And why are all the people making the flu shots opening up next to the Wuhan map? It's like, you know, did they put it in the flu shot this year? That's why you get it. You know,
That's just scary. Like that movie V for Vendetta, when he talks about what happened at Three Waters, and I forget the other name of the place that they killed 80,000 people. The government actually was responsible for it.
Yeah,
I mean that shit is scary, man. To think. Like a buildup toward war. I mean, does China let this thing out so it crashes our economy because they were on the rise as the next economic power? They played possum for a very long time that they weren't as powerful as they really were. Then all of a sudden, like, guess what? You know, thank you for outsourcing all your jobs to us, all the products that we make, and now you're kind of beholden to us.
Well, we are beholden to them. We're never going to have the labor and the raw materials the way that they do it to catch up to them with American yet. We can just head that way. And, you know, you might be like, wow, Trump's so great saying all this bad stuff about China. Like, he's showing them because they're probably listening to the news. And, well, guess what? None of them are listening to the news. So he can say whatever he wants to, as long as he's nice to the people behind the scenes. Like, hey, we'll share masks. Hey, we'll share the cure. You know, whatever it is. You don't know what goes on behind the scenes. So don't think it's like, you know, like, hey, we're going to go to World War III because of this. Because that ain't happening. You know, I don't think that's going to be the next world war that occurs. I think it might be another country for another time we can talk about. But at the end of the day, I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of things you can go into the conspiracy hole with, whether there's a lot of truth in it or none. It doesn't really matter. The only thing that matters is you should be able to, you know, if you're a healthy person, go out there and do your thing. And if you're not, start building up your immune system. Because if you are staying home and have nothing to do, this is a fine time to read on vitamins. It's a fine time to get your gut in check. It's a fine time to learn healthy cooking. It's a fine time to do some lunges or some plank or some core exercises. It's a fine time to get in a fighting shape before you go in the ring, I guess, you know?
Man, tell everybody where they can find you, man, your website and all that other stuff.
So I have a podcast that's not going to be out for a couple of weeks called Feeling Good with Dr. Phillips. And I have a place where I do talk and sell vitamins. It's called Dr. Phillips Formulations. And they could go there and find out a little bit more about us. And the products that I've listed are only ones that I would consider. There's thousands of vitamins. I listed only the ones that will be for your immune system and general health or your daily things that you should be on a daily basis. So pretty easy to weed through. I will put one caveat to that. Vitamin C, all the good vitamin C is backordered, so that ain't going to be there for a while, and the zinc will be up next week. But, you know, I think it's a low-cost thing, less than a coffee at Starbucks cost, just to take some vitamins to get the nutrients that you need into your body, which is hard to do the way people eat these days.
While we're on it, how many vitamins out there are horseshit? How many are, you know, sitting at the CVS or Walgreens counter, you know, Nature's Best or whatever, you know, easily accessible? How do you know a good vitamin from a bad vitamin?
I'd speak to a wellness doctor, you know, and follow that. I'll be honest, because I've done a lot of research on vitamins and vitamin companies, and I will tell you that, you know, you can look at independent rankings on vitamins, and the number one vitamin in the world is Centrum, and it's also the lowest rated. I'd rather eat a piece of cardboard.
I hope they don't come
after me for that, because I can't show that in the book about them. But yeah, there's garbage vitamins, and you get what you pay for with vitamins. Not that, you know, good ones are more expensive, it might be a few dollars more, but at the end of the day, you know, if it has synthetics in it, if it has these words you don't recognize in the bottom of the vitamin, that's kind of a clue that you may not be getting all vitamin. That's one way to look at it.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, sure. So just like the food, if there's ingredients in the vitamins that you can't pronounce that look like foreign objects or synthetic, or if you look up the word and it's synthetic, that's a good way to tell then.
Yep, I agree.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing, man. Dr. Lane Phillips, brother, thank you for coming on, being honest, opening up and chatting here. I look forward to having you on again soon, man.
Terrific. Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy.